All right, so get ready because we are diving deep into a case today.
Oh, yeah.
That's all about family, finances, and a trustee who may or may not have been as attentive as he should have been.
Okay.
So picture this. You have a husband, we'll call him Cappy, and he loses his wife, Sarah, and she leaves behind a trust that's supposed to make sure that he is taken care of.
Okay.
It says it's for his comfortable support and maintenance. But things, well, they kind of go downhill from there.
All right.
And the question becomes, did the trustee actually do what he was supposed to do?
Interesting. So what kind of trust are we talking about
So
here?
it's called a discretionary support trust.
Okay.
And it basically gives the trustee some wiggle room to decide how the money's used for the beneficiary's well-being.
Right. So it's not just like, here's a lump sum, do whatever you want.
Exactly.
There's got to be some thought put into it.
Yeah, it's not a blank check, though, right? There are still rules and responsibilities
Of
involved.
course. Of course.
So Sarah passes away, and Cappy, her husband, he starts running into some money problems.
So, yes.
Like serious financial hardship.
Wow.
Their lifestyle has to change drastically, from the comfortable life they had built together,
Makes sense.
thanks to Sarah's, considerable wealth. So now the trustee comes into the picture.
Okay.
His name is James Farr.
All right.
And wouldn't you know it, he also happens to be Sarah's longtime attorney.
Interesting.
So before we get into what he did or didn't do, what did the will actually say he should be doing?
Yeah, that's a great question because the will specifically said that Farr had to consider all of Cappy's different sources of support
Okay.
when he was making decisions about distributions from the trust.
Right.
And this part is really important
Yeah.
because this language is key, right? It establishes the legal standard.
Okay.
So that means Farr had a duty to really dig in and understand Cappy's financial
He
situation.
couldn't just assume everything was fine.
No, he had to be proactive. He had to inquire, like, really get a grasp of what Cappy's needs were.
But it sounds like, from what you're saying, that maybe Farr didn't quite get that memo.
Well, based on what the court found, it seems that way.
Oh boy.
So, Farr, he made very minimal inquiries into Cappy's financial struggles. And get this, he only distributed a tiny fraction of the trust's principal.
Like, how tiny are we talking?
A measly $300.
Lots.
$300.
Seriously.
Is that
That doesn't even cover groceries for a week these days.
you're telling me? Cappy was accustomed to a certain standard of living, and the person who was literally entrusted with his well-being barely lifted a finger to help.
So what did Cappy do? He's got to make ends meet somehow.
Right, so to stay afloat and to try and remain in the marital home, Cappy actually made a deal with his stepdaughter, Sally,
Okay.
and he transferred the property to her
Really?
in exchange for her covering the expenses.
Oh, so that way he could stay in the house.
Exactly, it seemed like a reasonable solution at the time.
Yeah, I mean, that seems to align with what Sarah probably would have wanted.
Right, to make sure he had a comfortable place to live.
That's exactly.
But I have a feeling this is where things get a bit more complicated.
I bet. So what happened when Cappy passed away?
Well, that's when all the drama really unfolded.
Okay.
So Margaret, who is Cappy's second wife, she found herself being forced to leave the property.
Oh no.
And that's what really kickstarted this whole legal battle.
Wow, so this case brings up some interesting questions, right?
Definitely.
Like, does a trustee have an obligation to make sure that a beneficiary can actually stay in their home?
That's a big one. And if so, did Farr actually fail in that duty?
And on top of all of that,
Yeah.
Sarah's will had something called an exculpatory clause.
Right.
Can you explain what that is?
So an exculpatory clause is essentially trying to protect the trustee
Okay.
from being held liable for certain decisions or actions they take.
Interesting.
It basically says you can't hold me personally responsible unless you can prove that I was grossly negligent or that I intentionally did something wrong.
Okay.
So these clauses, they're pretty common, but they can also be a bit controversial.
Especially in a situation like this, right?
Especially in a case like this where there are some serious questions about whether the trustee acted appropriately.
Okay, so let's recap.
Yeah.
We've got a trustee who might have messed up, a beneficiary facing some real hardship, and this clause that could potentially protect the trustee from any consequences.
That's a lot to unpack.
It is. So what did the court have to say about all of this?
Right, to the point.
Do they think the Farr actually messed up?
Well, the court's findings were actually pretty clear-cut.
Okay.
They determined that Farr did, in fact, breach his duty as a trustee.
Really?
because he didn't properly investigate Cappy's financial needs.
So he didn't do his due diligence.
Exactly.
Even though the will specifically said he had to consider all those factors.
It all goes back to that language in the will, remember?
Right, right.
The standard for a trustee isn't just to set things in motion and then walk away.
You have to actually be involved.
You got to be involved. You got to act prudently and reasonably.
So the court said that Farr messed up, but what did they think should happen to fix it?
Right. Like, what's the solution here?
Yeah. What's the remedy for this?
Good question. And that's what we'll dive into next time. Well, the court, they really saw a direct link between Farr not doing his job and Cappy losing his home.
So they saw that Farr's actions, or I guess inaction, actually had real consequences for Cappy.
Exactly like they said, if Farr had actually taken the time to figure out what Cappy's finances looked like, he would have known that Cappy needed more help.
Right.
And he would have given him enough money from the trust to cover the expenses of the house.
So they're basically saying Farr's inaction, that's what led to Cappy losing that comfortable life that Sarah had worked so hard to protect.
Right, they were pretty clear about that.
Okay, so what was the court's initial solution? How did they try to fix all of this?
So first they said, okay, let's give the property back to Margaret.
Cappy's widow.
Yeah. Okay. So they wanted to undo that whole deal with Sally and basically go back to how things would have been if Farr had done what he was supposed to.
On the surface, that seems like a pretty fair solution, right?
Yeah, like at first glance, you're like, okay, that makes sense.
But I'm sensing there's a twist coming.
Oh, there definitely is.
What happened?
The court actually ended up reversing that decision.
Wait, really?
Yeah, they realized that giving the property back to Margaret, it wasn't really the best way to handle things.
Okay, I'm intrigued. Why did they change their minds? What made them rethink things?
Well, for one thing, the court realized that Sally and her husband, they were acting in good faith.
Oh, so they didn't know that Farr wasn't doing what he was supposed to do.
Right. They had no idea about that whole breach of duty thing.
And they had even put their own money into the property.
Exactly. Like, they had invested a lot of their own money into the place.
So it sounds like they were really trying to help Cappy, not like they were trying to pull a fast one or anything.
Right. It wasn't like they were scheming or anything. Right. And on top of that, the court realized that forcing Sally to give up the house, it wouldn't actually solve the main problem.
Which was
Farr not taking care of Cappy like the will said he should.
Right, right.
So they were trying to come up with a solution that would actually make things right for Cappy, you know?
I see. So if giving the property back wasn't the answer,
yeah.
What was? What did they end up doing?
So they came up with this really interesting idea.
Okay.
They imposed something called a constructive trust on the money that was left in Cappy's trust.
A constructive trust?
Yeah.
I've never heard of that before.
It's a bit of a legal term.
Okay.
But you can think of it like the court creating a pretend trust.
Okay.
Like a fictional trust to try and right a wrong.
Okay.
So the money doesn't actually belong to the estate.
Right.
But legally, they're going to treat it like it does just to make sure everything's fair.
I see. So in this case, what does that actually mean for the money?
Well, it means that all that money that was left over, remember there was like over $80,000. That's now considered to belong to Cappy's estate.
So it's like they're saying, okay, the trustee messed up, so let's take the money that should have gone to Cappy and make sure it goes to the right people.
Exactly. It's a way of trying to make things right, even though so much time has passed.
Yeah, I like that.
But there's one more piece to this puzzle that we have to talk about.
I bet I know what you're going to say.
What's that?
What about Farr? He didn't do what he was supposed to do as trustee.
Right.
Did he just walk away scot-free because of that exculpatory clause?
Okay. So this is where things get even more complicated.
Okay.
Remember, the court did say that Farr messed up. He breached his duty.
Right.
But when it came to actually making him pay for it, like holding him personally liable, they upheld the exculpatory clause.
And so he was protected from any big financial consequences.
Yeah, basically.
But wait a minute, how does that even make sense? He messed up, but he's not responsible.
Well, there are definitely arguments on both sides of this. Some people say that when the trustee is the one who writes the will and puts in a clause that benefits them, like this exculpatory clause did for Farr, that the court should look at it extra carefully.
That makes sense. It seems like there could be a conflict of interest there.
Right. Like, is he really looking out for the beneficiary or just for himself?
Right.
So people definitely raise concerns about that.
Understandably.
But here's the thing.
Yeah.
There are very specific legal rules for when a court can say that an exculpatory clause is invalid. Like, it doesn't count.
Okay, and what are those rules?
They have to prove that the clause was put in the will because of something shady going on.
Okay.
Like bad faith, undue influence, or abuse of the trustee's position.
So did the court find any of that in this case?
They didn't. Mm-hmm. They said there was no evidence of any of those things happening.
Interesting.
And remember, no one was arguing that Sarah didn't want the clause in there.
Right.
And everyone agreed that she was really smart about money, so it wasn't like she was tricked or anything.
So it seems like, in the end, this whole case is kind of a mixed bag.
It really is.
The court said that the trustee didn't do his job.
Right.
But that clause in the will ended up shielding him from any big penalties.
It's kind of a complicated outcome, right?
Yeah, it is. It really shows how tricky things can get with wills and trusts and the law.
You hit the nail on the head. It's all about that tension between protecting the beneficiary,
right, yeah,
and also upholding what's written in the will, even if it seems like the trustee is getting an advantage.
This has been so insightful.
I'm glad.
What are the biggest things that our listeners should keep in mind, especially when it comes to stuff like wills, trusts, or just family finances in general?
This case really highlights a few key points.
Oh.
First of all, and this is probably the most important,
okay,
trustees have to be diligent.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just a title, it's a real responsibility.
Right. You're in charge of someone's well-being.
Exactly. And when you've got a trust like this one where you get to make decisions about how the money's used, it's even more important to be careful.
Right. You have to really understand what the beneficiary needs.
Yes. You have to be proactive. You have to ask questions. You can't just assume everything's fine.
Like we were talking about before, it's about more than just the words in the will.
Right.
It's about what the person who made the trust actually wanted.
Exactly. That's a great way to put it.
Okay. What else?
This case also shows how tricky those exculpatory clauses can be.
Mm-hmm.
They can be helpful to protect trustees from lawsuits that aren't fair.
Right.
But they shouldn't be a way for trustees to get away with not doing their job.
So it's about finding that balance.
Right. Yeah. How do you protect the trustee, but also make sure the beneficiary is getting what they need?
It seems like that's where clear communication comes in.
Definitely.
And getting good legal advice before you even write the will can make a huge difference.
Absolutely. It's all about planning ahead and having those safeguards in place from the beginning.
Okay. Anything else?
One last thing.
Okay.
This case is a good reminder that legal stuff, especially when it comes to money and family,
mm-hmm,
it's always tied to personal stuff, like people's emotions and relationships.
Right. We're not just talking about abstract legal concepts here.
Exactly. We're talking about people's homes,
yeah,
their financial security, their families.
So it's important to remember that.
It's crucial to approach these situations with sensitivity and understanding.
And remember that real people's lives are being affected.
Absolutely. The law is just the framework. But inside that framework, you have real people with real stories.
Well said. Well, before we wrap up today, I want to leave our listeners with something to think about.
Okay. I like it.
If you were writing your own will and you wanted to include a discretionary support trust,
yeah,
how would you write it to make sure that your trustee actually did what you wanted? What kinds of things would you put in there to protect your beneficiary? It's definitely something to think about after hearing what happened with Cappy and Sarah.
That's a great question, and it really shows how important it is to think ahead and make a plan. It really does. Mm-hmm. You know, it really makes you think about what you would do in that situation.
Yeah, for sure. So we've dug deep into this case.
We have.
Uncovered some pretty surprising twists and turns.
Definitely a lot going on.
And we've really explored the nuances of trusts, trustees, the whole legal system.
It's fascinating, isn't it?
It is. So what are some key takeaways you think our listeners should walk away with today?
I think the biggest thing we've seen here is just how important it is for a trustee to be diligent.
Yeah.
It's not just a title.
Yeah.
You know, it's a huge responsibility.
Right. You're dealing with someone's livelihood, basically.
Exactly. And especially with a discretionary support trust,
hmm,
where you get to decide how the money is used. You know,
yeah,
that responsibility is even bigger.
You can't just sit back and watch.
You got to be proactive. You got to ask questions. You got to really understand what the beneficiary needs.
It's like we've been saying, it's not just about what the will says. It's about what the person who created the trust actually wanted to happen.
Exactly. Couldn't have said it better myself.
And this case also really showed us how those exculpatory clauses can be kind of a double-edged sword.
Yeah, they're meant to protect trustees from being sued for no reason.
Right.
But they shouldn't be a way for them to get away with neglecting their duties.
Right. Like, it's got to be a balance.
Absolutely. A balance between protecting the trustee and making sure the beneficiary is taken care of.
And that's where good communication comes in.
Oh, definitely.
And getting good legal advice early on in the process.
So important.
Having those safeguards in place can prevent so many problems down the road.
Absolutely. A little planning goes a long way.
And lastly, I think this whole case reminds us that legal issues, especially when it comes to trusts and estates, they're always tied to personal stuff like emotions and family dynamics.
It's true. It's not just about abstract legal concepts.
Exactly. We're talking about real people's lives here.
Their homes, their financial security, their families. You got to approach these situations with some empathy, you know?
It's a good reminder that behind every legal case is a human story.
Well said.
Well, thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive.
It's been a pleasure.
It's been fascinating.
It has.
We've learned a lot.
Definitely.
And to our listeners out there, we hope this has given you some food for thought.
Yeah, maybe even spark some conversations about your own plans for the future.
Absolutely. So until next time, keep those brains buzzing. And remember, a little knowledge can go a long way.